as I can. I live my life as well as I can. I'm happy where I am. I'm not looking for another land. Got my woman by my side and I'm feeling pretty good. Got my woman by my side and I'm feeling pretty good. Can't get much better. Still, I wish that it would be.
Democracy Now.
In consequences,
therefore, I hold
es el momento
that this is the moment for us to determine
con ese olvido,
to do away with this abandonment, this disdain,
hacia América Latina,
and this forgetfulness for Latin America and the Caribbean.
Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador has called on the United States to stop treating Latin America with disdain. AMLO made the comments to President Biden, who's visiting Mexico for the North American Leaders Summit.
We're also going to discuss our shared security, including our joint action to address the plague of fentanyl, which has killed 100,000 Americans so far, and how we can tackle irregular migration, which I think we're well on our way to doing.
We'll talk about the summit with two guests in Mexico City, then look at the 100th anniversary of the Rosewood Massacre in Florida, when an armed white mob attacked the predominantly black town in central Florida. The mob killed at least six black residents and burned nearly all buildings to the ground. We'll speak to a professor whose grandfather survived the massacre. And we talk to former NAACP President Ben Jealous about his new memoir, Never Forget Our People Were Always Free, A Parable of American Healing. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Republicans in the House of Representatives have approved a new rules package that'll gut the Office of Congressional Ethics. The measure will force out three of the four Democrats currently serving on the office's board of directors and will severely limit the office's ability to hire new workers, including investigative staffers. Another provision in the new rules package allows a single lawmaker to force a vote on ousting the House Speaker. It was a concession made by newly minted Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy to win the support of far-right members of his party. Democrats also warned McCarthy appears to have struck informal agreements with fellow Republicans. This is Massachusetts Democratic Congressmember Jim McGovern.
You know, everybody's talking about transparency and openness. It would be nice if there was a little bit more transparency and openness from the other side. This is backroom politics. That's what this is about. Secret deals that no one's going to know anything about until it's too late.
In their first order of business, Republicans approved legislation slashing funding to the IRS in a party-line vote, 221 to 210. Critics say the bill's designed to protect wealthy individuals and corporate tax cheats. In Brazil, at least 1,500 people have been detained since Sunday's assault on the Brazilian Congress, Supreme Court and presidential palace by supporters of the former far-right president Jair Bolsonaro in the capital, Brasilia. Brazil's justice minister, Flavio Dino, spoke Monday.
ex-presidente da República Jair Bolsonaro.
The former president of the Republic, Jair Bolsonaro, and all of his followers, for example, frequently targeted attacks against the Supreme Court. That is why I say that words have power, especially when they are words of the president of the Republic. The president exercises factual material powers, but also exercises symbolic powers, which include the power of words. What we witnessed was that this frequent discourse in social media gained legs, arms, stones, bullets, bombs.
Here in the United States, a group of Democratic Congress members, including Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, are urging President Biden to expel Bolsonaro from the U.S. The far-right leader has been staying in Orlando, Florida, after he fled Brazil ahead of the inauguration of President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva last week. Bolsonaro faces at least four criminal probes in Brazil. He was admitted to a Florida hospital Monday after complaining of intestinal pain, one day after his supporters stormed the government buildings in Brasilia. In Peru, at least 17 people were killed Monday after Peruvian security forces opened fire at anti-government protesters in the city of Juliaca. At least two teenagers were among the dead. Protesters are demanding the interim president, Dina Boluarte, resign. Some 40 people have died nationwide since mass mobilizations erupted in Peru last month following the ouster and arrest of the leftist former president, Pedro Castillo. Police in Juliaca reportedly opened fire as protesters tried to shield themselves with metal plates.
I was holding my camera when a police officer asked me to kneel while pointing a gun at me. Then I heard a shot and I felt my foot blocked. Then I felt a cramp. I took four steps and I fell on the ground because I couldn't walk.
Meanwhile, Peru's new government has banned former Bolivian President Evo Morales from entering Peruvian territory in response to Morales' support for Pedro Castillo. Morales has also accused Dina Boluarte's government of human rights violations against protesters. Israel's new far-right government's revoked entry permits for Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki and three Fatah officials in retaliation for their effort to bring the illegal occupation of Palestinian territories to the International Court of Justice. This is Palestinian Foreign Ministry advisor Ahmed al-Dik.
These measures will not stop us and will not stop the foreign minister and the Palestinian leadership from continuing our political and diplomatic legal efforts to protect the fair national legitimate rights of our people and to uncover the violations and the crimes of the occupation.
Israel's security cabinet also moved to withhold $39 million in revenues from the Palestinian Authority and imposed a moratorium on Palestinian construction projects in the occupied West Bank. Meanwhile, Israel's national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, has ordered police to remove Palestinian flags from public spaces, calling their display a, quote, form of supporting terror. Palestinian-American author Youssef Munayir tweeted in response, quote, Israel holds an entire stateless nation under military occupation. They got enough nukes to start a regional conflagration, but they fear a piece of cloth, unquote. Over the weekend, thousands of people demonstrated in Tel Aviv against the new Israeli government and the increasing threats it poses to democracy and human rights. In California, authorities have ordered thousands of people in several counties evacuated after winter storms brought an atmospheric river of rain and snow to much of the state. Hardest hit was California's central coast, where coastal communities face flash flooding, landslides and power outages. The death toll from winter storms rose to at least 14 Monday after two people were killed by falling trees. Some 8 million people in Los Angeles County were under a flash flood warning, while parts of Santa Barbara County received more than 7 inches of rain over a span of just 12 hours. Forecasters predict more relentless rain will hit California over the coming week. The White House has confirmed reports that classified documents were discovered in a former office space used by Joe Biden in Washington, D.C. as vice president. On Monday, Biden's lawyer said a small number of the documents were discovered in a locked closet as they were closing the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement. It's not clear what the documents were related to. Biden's lawyers say they immediately notified the National Archives, which took possession of the records the next day. In 2018, then-President President Trump signed a bill making it a felony rather than a misdemeanor to knowingly remove classified materials with the intent to retain them at an unauthorized location. Those convicted face up to 5 years in prison. Special Counsel Jack Smith is currently investigating Trump for allegedly mishandling at least 325 classified documents seized by the FBI at Mar-a-Lago last August. Federal prosecutors have issued former President Trump's personal attorney, Rudolph Giuliani, grand jury subpoenas, part of an investigation into Trump's fundraising efforts after the 2020 election. That's according to multiple news reports citing an unnamed person familiar with the matter. The Save America PAC raised over $250 million off Trump supporters on the false claim the 2020 election results were fraudulent. It's not clear how much of the money Trump's lawyers received, but one witness told the House January 6 committee Giuliani asked to be paid $20,000 a day. In Georgia, a special grand jury has wrapped up its probe of efforts by former President Trump and his allies to overturn the 2020 election. The decision whether to seek an indictment is now in the hands of Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis. Since June, the grand jury's heard testimony from dozens of witnesses, including Rudy Giuliani and South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. In January 2021, Trump told Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, quote, "I just want to find 11,780 votes, the margin he would have needed to defeat Joe Biden in Georgia." Meanwhile, a federal judge in New York has delayed the unsealing of a deposition given by Trump in a lawsuit accusing him of defamation. Former magazine columnist E. Jean Carroll has accused Trump of raping her in the 1990s, which the former president's denied. The lawsuit will be heard today by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, where Trump's lawyers will argue presidents can't be personally sued for statements made while in office. In California, community advocates are demanding justice for Kenan Anderson, a 31-year-old black father and high school English teacher who was killed by Los Angeles police January 3rd. Officers were called to the scene after a car accident was reported. As police attempted to arrest Anderson, he was tased for several minutes, tackled and pushed down on the pavement, handcuffed and restrained at the ankles. Anderson was then taken to the hospital, where he died of cardiac arrest. The LAPD did not acknowledge Anderson's death until 3 days later. Patrice Cullors, author and co-founder of Black Lives Matter, said on Instagram Anderson was her cousin. She wrote Monday, quote, "Kenan deserves to be alive right now. His child deserves to be raised by his father," unquote. LAPD officers have killed at least three people so far in 2023. Data by the group Mapping Police Violence shows 2022 was the deadliest year on record for police violence, as law enforcement killed at least 1,176 people across the United States. And here in New York, over 7,000 nurses at Mount Sinai Hospital and Montefiore Medical Center are striking for a second straight day, demanding higher wages, stable benefits and more staffing support to cope with a growing number of patients. This is New York State Nurses Association President Nancy Haggins speaking from the picket line Monday.
Nurses don't want to strike. We would rather be inside, yep, taking care of our patients.
That's right.
But safely, in a safe manner, not the condition they have us working for the past 5, 10 years. Enough is enough, Sinai. Enough is enough.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago, Illinois. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, we're going to be in today in Mexico. President Biden's meeting with the presidents of Mexico and Canada today for the North American Leaders Summit in Mexico City. Key issues on the table include migration, the economy, trade and security. On Monday, Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador welcomed Biden to the National Palace in Mexico City. AMLO called on Biden to invest more in Latin America and to end what he describes as decades of, quote, disdain by the U.S. towards the region.
Therefore, I hold that this is the moment for us to determine to do away with this abandonment, this disdain, and this forgetfulness for Latin America and the Caribbean.
a la política,
which is opposed to the policy
de la buena vecindad,
of a good neighborhood,
titán,
of the titan,
de la libertad,
of freedom,
Franklin Delano,
and liberty, FDR Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And starting with you, because
no habría
there would be
otro dirigente,
no other leader
que pudiera llevar a cabo
that could implement
esta empresa,
this enterprise, beginning with you, to start a new stage with you, Mr. President, of the nations and the peoples of the continent, as of respect and mutual aid and help and assistance. President Biden, you hold the key in your hand to open and to substantially improve the relationship among all the countries of the American continent.
During his meeting with the Mexican president, President Biden vowed to discuss ways to strengthen U.S. relations with Mexico.
So today, we're going to discuss how we can further deepen that relationship, not only in Mexico, but in the Western Hemisphere. This includes strengthening our supply chains to make the hemisphere even more competitive. And we're also going to discuss our shared security, including our joint action to address the plague of fentanyl, which is killed 100,000 Americans so far, and how we can tackle irregular migration, which I think we're well on our way to doing.
The report that you just put out, President Biden came from the border, El Paso. First visit he has made as president to the border and made his way to Mexico City.
This is Brian Campbell, and you're listening to New Spins Library on CKUT.
It's a lightning morning, the sun is shining bright. Put away your sadness, dear, we're gonna have a bright good time.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will bring a mix of sun and clouds and a high of minus 9 degrees Celsius. Thursday will bring a few flurries developing into a light rain later in the afternoon. The high will be 2 degrees Celsius. Friday will be cloudy with a rain-snow mix in the morning and flurries in the afternoon. The high will be 2 degrees Celsius. Saturday will bring a mix of sun and clouds in the morning and become mainly sunny in the afternoon. Sunday will be sunny throughout the day with a high of minus 6 degrees Celsius. Monday will be mainly sunny with a few cloudy periods. The high will be minus 5 degrees Celsius. And finally, Tuesday will be partly sunny in the morning and then thickening clouds in the afternoon. That's all for weather on the New Spins Library on CKUT. The time is now 8:17 a.m. In the northern Alberta community of Chipewyan Prairie Den First Nation, a father teaches his child how to create a caribou drum. In this short documentary, cultural reclamation and traditional knowledge are celebrated and passed down from one generation to the next, inspiring renewed hope for the future. The film had its world premiere at the 2022 Calgary International Film Festival and has screened at festivals in Canada and the U.S. With us today, we have Eric Janvier, Northwest Studio filmmaker of Heartbeat of a Nation. Hi, Eric, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be a filmmaker inspired to produce Heartbeat of a Nation.
So again, my name is Eric Janvier. I'm originally from Fort McMurray, Alberta, currently living in Edmonton. And, you know, I've always been interested in film and television and just creating stories and crafting stories. And that's and kind of how I ended up here in this, you know, in this industry. And then over the years, I've kind of created, I made a name for myself, and the National Film Board had reached out to me asking for content or some kind of idea. And I threw them a bunch of different stuff. And then eventually we landed on Heartbeat of a Nation because, you know, this story to me was more personal.
What is the story you want to tell in Heartbeat of a Nation?
For me, the story being so personal, I really wanted to tell my family's history and my family's personal connection to the caribou drum. And so When I first conceived the idea, it wasn't really a focus on my family. It was more so a focus on the drum. But as things kind of move forward, and I really started to come to the conclusion that if I'm going to tell this story, I need to tell it from my point of view and my family's point of view, not somebody else's. So that's kind of how things came about.
How is this Heartbeat of a Nation of personal importance to you?
Yeah, again, this is my family's story, and it's, you know, the two people or the three people that are shown in my documentary are my brother, my nephew, and my auntie. And so me and my brothers, we're a drum group, and we have been carrying on or sharing our knowledge and our traditions with different communities. And we've really been, you know, carrying the drum for the past decade and reintroducing it back into our community.
What is the importance of caribou and the caribou drum to your community?
For us, the caribou was always a subsistence. It was what our ancestors would rely on for food and for warmth. And, you know, from there, that's where the drum was created. And obviously, over time, over the last few decades, the woodland caribou were native to where I'm from. They've really been dwindling in size. Where there used to be thousands, you're lucky if you can spot one in anywhere. The caribou drum, especially how it's kind of making its return in our area of the world, it's kind of symbolizing a return to our culture and to our shared histories. And it's really just a way for us to reconnect with who we are as Dene people.
What do you want the audience to take away from this film?
For the indigenous communities that watch this, the indigenous audience, I really want them to stand and to know that it's never too late or it's never too early to learn your culture. We've got my brother, who's 38 at the time of filming. He just started picking up the drum not too long ago, whereas my nephew, who at the time was eight or nine, he also ended up just picking up the drum not too long ago. So it's never too early or too late to really relearn or to take on your culture. And then for the non-Indigenous community, I really want them to see us as we are and not what we used to be, and how we're modernizing a lot of our cultural aspects and a lot of our traditions. And you see that in the documentary where my brother is using power tools instead of traditional tools, woodworking tools. Yeah, so the story I really want to tell is my family connection to the drum and how important it is to my community, and not just my community, but surrounding communities and, you know, ones that maybe aren't as connected to the drum, and they can see that we, you know, started picking up the drum not too long ago and that we're really carrying it and playing the drum and creating our drums and crafting our drums. So I really wanted to tell that story of how we're connected to this drum and how we're sharing the knowledge and the stories with our elders and our youth and with everybody involved.
Who plays in the film and what does everyone do?
My brother and my nephew and my auntie. So my brother is the one that is really crafting the drum, and he's making a drum for himself and for my nephew, August. And August really, he's there and he's watching, he's learning and experiencing how to make a drum. And this is the first drum that August had ever made with my brother. And so really getting to see the dynamic between those two and seeing how August is taking in the knowledge, even if at times he does look like he's bored. And then my auntie, who actually wasn't supposed to be there, we were just filming on her property and she was in the background. And there's a really important moment in the documentary that wasn't scripted. I didn't provoke it. And she just saw what was happening and really spoke from the heart. And that's one of those moments that people really talk about when they talk about this documentary.
May we hear some audio from the program?
Yep.
This is Heartbeat of a Nation on CKUT. When and where will you show the film Heartbeat of a Nation?
We are still playing festivals, but we are doing a release in mid-January. online, so it'll be accessible to all communities across Canada. It'll be on the National Film Board of Canada website, as well as YouTube, I believe. They will be able to see it online in the next coming weeks here.
If our listeners want more information, where should they go?
They can go to the National Film Board of Canada website and search up Heartbeat of a Nation. You'll find all the information there. You can find when it'll be screening online, and you can find all the biography of the filmmakers involved and who was involved and everything like that.
Thank you for your interview today.
Yeah, no, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Eric Janvier speaking about his film Heartbeat of a Nation. I'm your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Good morning, McGill University. This is Todor O, letting you know that CKUT has some of the freshest and hottest artists you can find anywhere in Canada. Oh, I think I just made myself hungry. Anyway, you are listening to and hopefully savoring the new Spins Library on CKUT 90.3 FM.
For generations, men and women alike have searched for plants or food, powders or potions that could turn up the heat. One food type prevailed. This week on In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, we ask, are oysters actually an aphrodisiac?
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Hello, lovely listeners, and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized, informative podcast that answers the mysteries of the world in 15 or so minutes.
Have you ever wondered if time travel is possible?
Or if alternate realities exist?
Are micro pigs actually tiny pigs?
If you've wondered the answer to any of those questions, then good news, you've come to the right place. We have answered all of those, and we are about to answer one more.
So step into the shower with us as we answer the big question, are oysters an aphrodisiac?
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Before we go in deep asking questions about oysters, there is something about oysters that I am absolutely sure of.
Oh yeah, what's that?
That they are disgusting.
Do you know what? You can stop right there and get off the oyster-hating train. Oysters are great. I love oysters. And do you know what? I think it's one of those things that, like, as you grow up and you stop being afraid of oysters, that's the sign of you being a good person.
What is it about them that you like? Like, I feel like anybody who likes oysters loves oysters.
Good. You know, it's like, granted, they're like snotty little slime salt monsters.
Do they not just taste like seawater to you?
No, like that's when you get that finesse. You drink the liquor of the oyster, and you get a little bit of salt. You get a bit of umami. You get those kind of like those mineral notes. You know, if the I had an oyster recently where the oyster where it was farmed was near an offflow from a bog. So, like, you could actually taste a kind of woodiness to it. Oh, it was amazing.
And do you just swallow them down in one, or do you chew them?
I kind of swirl them a little bit, swish them.
But you don't chew. You don't bite them.
You can chew.
But you don't.
I do, sometimes.
Okay.
It depends on the oyster. Like, if I'm getting something like a native, like a smaller oyster, then I will. But then if I'm getting, like, if I'm having a gigas or, like, a Dungarvan special, then those are huge. I mean, those, like, I've had those, like, they're the size of the palm of your hand.
Yeah,
so you're not gonna chew that, you know. But also, like, yeah, it's like I enjoy it. I didn't always enjoy oysters. I didn't. Like, the first time I ever had an oyster, I was like 4 or 5 years old, and I remember watching my parents.
That just says a lot about Marcus's upbringing, doesn't it? At 4 or 5 years old, I was eating like sausages wrapped up in a slice of white bread, and Marcus was having oysters.
Well, I remember we were in Ballybunion, which is like, it was on the west coast of Ireland, and I remember seeing my parents eat oysters, and I was a kid. I was like, ah! I'm half French as well, for any new listeners.
So you were like, oh!
Yeah. I was like, oh! No, like, I was a little French kid being like, maman, papa, oysters, please! because I wanted to be like my parents. And I tried my first oyster and I vomited everywhere in the restaurant.
I can imagine what that vomit looked like. Snot.
It just looked like one oyster.
Oh,
and
God.
Whatever, like the chips I'd had for lunch. Anyway.
Love them or loathe them, it's been an urban myth for generations that they are in fact an aphrodisiac.
An aphrodisiac, for those of you who don't know, is something that turns up the heat, heightens your sexual desires and brings the hubba hubba. Basically something that makes you horny.
Marcus knows this, but it's always been a dream of mine to open a corn shack.
So what's a corn shack? Just like, paint a visual picture for us here.
Okay, like a stall that sells nothing but corn with all sorts of toppings. And I want to call the stall either Corn Hub or So Corny, 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 Corny.
Do you know what, Taz? That's the wonderful thing about 2019. Like, today, you're a podcast producer. Tomorrow, you could be a corn shack entrepreneur. God knows what you could be in 10 years' time.
Keep the dream alive, baby.
Keep that dream alive.
Anyway, I far prefer to be talking about corn on this whole episode, but instead we've got to talk about oysters.
So just to kind of go back to zero, like, what is the actual definition for an oyster? Like, it's not a fish. Does it fall, like, is it the first cousin of a clam?
Oyster is the common name for a number of different families of saltwater bivalve mollusks that live in marine or brackish habitats. In some species, the valves are highly calcified and many are somewhat irregular in shape.
Okay. Do you know what? There's actually an ongoing debate at the moment on whether oysters are vegan.
Why is that? Why is that actually?
So a lot of people are vegan for the reason that, like, you know, intensive meat farming is very damaging to the environment. Whereas oyster farming, because they are saltwater bivalve mollusks, is actually really good for the environment. Oysters are filter feeders. So you can put them anywhere. They're very cheap to consume. Or very cheap to produce, sorry. You can put them anywhere and they will actually clean the water of wherever they are put. Also, when it comes to consumption, oysters don't have a central nervous system, so they have no consciences and they don't feel a thing.
That is kind of like the parameters of being vegan or vegetarian. It's a central nervous system.
Nothing suffers.
Okay.
It's good for the environment and they're a really, really excellent source of protein.
Interesting. The only problem is they're disgusting.
I think they're deadly.
Anyway,
you're just a coward.
Okay, let's get back to the beginning of where this whole theory began.
Can I actually, just before you say anything, Taz and I once went on a date and I ordered some oysters and it was quite early in our relationship and she tried one and couldn't swallow it she kept it in her mouth for, I'm going to say, like 5 minutes until eventually she had to spit it into the shell and put it back upside down into the ice.
Not my brightest moment.
It's okay. Let's go back, right back to the beginning. Like, where does this theory of oysters making you horny all begin? Like, how far back does it go?
Oysters have been a reputed aphrodisiac at least since the Roman Empire and supposedly were regularly enjoyed as a virility booster by Casanova, an Enlightenment era polymath who lived from about 1725 to 1798. Casanova became best known for having seduced more than 100 women, described at length in his memoir, and his secret va-va-voom may have been from oysters.
I'd love to read that memoir. It's like, oh yeah, my name's Casanova. I eat oysters and ride a load of women. Go on, Casanova. Good man. So historically, we know that oysters have been enjoyed since the 1700s and may have been considered an aphrodisiac back then. But has there been any real research into the orgasmic properties of this saltwater bivalve mollusk since then?
Well, since Casanova, people believe it to be a bit of an urban myth. But then in 2005, the idea that an oyster is an aphrodisiac got a huge boost. So around this time, many consumer publications reported the bivalve mollusks, which include clams, oysters, mussels and scallops, have been found to have desire-inducing properties.
And which publications are these? Are they like Horny Oyster Monthly or are they actual credible sources?
They're actually credible sources. So the stories came out of a presentation at the American Chemical Society by George Fisher. I love that his name is George Fisher. Yeah, I know. Anyway, mm-hmm. Bad joke. George Fisher is a professor of chemistry at Miami's Barry University. Fisher and some colleagues discovered that mussels contained the amino acid D-aspartic acid,
right,
which has been found to increase the level of sex hormones in lab rats. even though the study did not involve oysters exactly, Fisher was quoted in a number of publications speculating that perhaps the amino acid could contribute to the aphrodisiac effect.
So I've never ever heard of a D-aspartic acid, or a, but what exactly is its effect on humans? Like, is it, does it inflate the balloon?
The effect of D-aspartic acid in humans is still being studied. It may increase testosterone in sedentary men, but what it can do beyond that is not exactly clear. According to a 2015 study published in the Journal of International Society of Sports Nutrition.
Ah, okay, so it increases the testosterone. That makes sense. But like, there are other supplements and food types known to boost testosterone production. Why is it only the oyster that's a link to affecting sex drive?
Michael Kreichman, a sexual medicine gynecologist and counsellor at the Southern Californian Center for Sexual Health and Survivorship Medicine in Newport Beach, California, whoa, that's a mouthful, has attempted to gather the available scientific evidence on so-called aphrodisiacs. And he thinks that people are really suffering in silence and kind of looking for good information, and there just isn't a lot out there.
So basically people are kind of clutching at straws.
In a 2015 paper in the journal Sexual Medicine Review, Kreichman found the risks of many substances people use to stimulate desire far outweigh any potential benefits,
okay, right,
of which he found very, very little. Oysters are, of course, safe to consume, but here's the crux of it. No scientific studies have been conducted to show they can stimulate desire. The bivalves do contain zinc, which has been found to be an essential nutrient for testosterone production and spermatogenesis, he wrote in a paper. They also contain specific amino acids, which you talked about earlier, and serotonin, which are integral in the neutral path of the pleasure response, according to Kreichman. But these minerals and chemicals are also found in countless other food types. So it's hard to say that solely an oyster is an aphrodisiac.
So it's basically, it's kind of based on the placebo effect and Casanova spreading rumours.
That's exactly it. And Kreichman actually talks about this, saying the challenge with studying oysters' potential impact on desire is that there is a very large placebo effect.
The placebo effect being, just for anybody who doesn't know, when people experience a benefit or change from an inactive supplement. Basically, the power of the mind.
Yeah, so basically when people are told that there is a change happening in their body and it's basically a lie, and they believe it to be happening because
when a placebo group in any kind of medical study are generally given sugar pills, and it's seeing if there's any noticeable difference in their conditions or behaviours as opposed to the people given the actual control substance.
Yeah, and it actually a lot of the time shows up a positive result. But if his patients ask about oysters, he tells them there is limited data to support their use. But, adds Kreichman, if they like having oysters and it makes them feel better, then why the hell not?
Has anyone other than Kreichman studied this? Like, this is what I love about In the Show. You find people who've dedicated their lives to like one little specific mad thing, like do oysters wet the lettuce? You know, like, it's kind of...
Okay, so I found another chap to have studied this, a guy called Barry Orr-Komisaruk, a professor of psychology at Rutgers University in Newark. And he says that he knows of no data proving that oysters have an aphrodisiac effect. So far, no one has discovered any substance that can truly turn on desire, says Barry, who studies the neural pathways involved in sex and is the co-author of The Science of Orgasm.
So this guy spent his whole life researching the science of an orgasm.
I know.
Fair play.
I wonder, was there any practical experiments?
I'm sure there was. So he hasn't found any substance at all which can truly turn on desire. Like, he hasn't found that mythical kind of love potion. Has he found anything that actually affects a person's sex drives?
Some recreational drugs, like marijuana, can intensify the sexual response, he says. But that's not true for everyone. According to the University of California, Santa Barbara, which maintains a sexual health and information website based on scientific findings, marijuana can lead to heightened arousal, but it can also impair performance and lower inhibitions, leading to riskier sexual activity, according to the site.
So again, no real clear-cut proof on this one. Anything else that can affect the sex drive at all?
Alcohol can facilitate sex because it lowers inhibitions, but as Shakespeare noted in Macbeth, alcohol provokes the desires, but it takes away the performance. Pharmaceuticals like Viagra and Levitra add potency to sexual desire, but, adds Komisaruk, only if the desire is already there. So the likes of Viagra can aid sex, but only if the desire is there. Desire, Komisaruk says, is a very tricky issue. It's complicated and nobody really understands it very well.
So to kind of wrap things up, oysters might turn you on, but if they do, so might another whole host of food types and substances, right?
Yeah, so there is like, there has been a bit of science carried out on this, and there are things in oysters, there are amino acids and a whole host of other things that can kind of aid in sexual desire, but an oyster solely is not this be-all and end-all aphrodisiac that contains any abnormal things than any other food types that can aid desire as well.
Do you know what? I still love oysters and I'm still going to eat oysters. And who knows if that will do anything to me, but I love them regardless.
In the show with Tazimarcus, 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 in the show with Tazimarcus.
Well, there you have it, guys. If oysters turn you on, then continue to eat the oysters, but there may not be any scientific proof that they are the aphrodisiac they promise to be.
Just don't be a shellfish lover.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of In the Show with Taz and Marcus. We hope you've learned something, and if you want to learn more weird, random and wonderful facts, then good news, there are over 75 episodes of In the Show with Taz and Marcus that are ready for your waiting ears. We answer all types of questions in 15 or so minutes. You can download them, listen to them in bulk, listen to them on your commute, when you're exercising, when you're cooking, wherever you so please. But if you listen to them, you will be a more interesting dinner party guest.
And don't we all want to be a more interesting dinner party guest? If you have a question that you'd like to hear answered on In the Show with Taz and Marcus, it couldn't be easier to get it in front of our eyes. You can email us on
InTheShowerPodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can get in touch with us on Facebook by looking up In the Show with Taz and Marcus. Or you can get us on Instagram or Twitter at InTheShowerPod.
If you want to get in contact and just say that you listen to the podcast, we would really, really, really love that. All you listeners are invisible to us. So when we get an email from someone just saying that they've enjoyed the episode, then it really, really does make a huge difference to our days.
As ever, and a lot of you do send us pictures of your pets, but we can always take more.
If you've liked this episode, then please do share it to all your friends and family, anybody that you may think will enjoy it.
That's how podcasts spread, and we'd really, really appreciate it.
The debunking doesn't stop here. Next week, we're going to tackle a whole new question, and I'm excited for it.
This question comes from Sean McCardle, and he asks us, where do humans actually sit on the food chain?
I'm so, so excited for that one. That episode is going to be out next Monday in time for your morning shower. But in the meantime,
keep scrubbing.
In the show with Tazimarcus, 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 in the show with Tazimarcus.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Donna didn't come into the office today?
No, she's got a fever.
Aww, that's so thoughtful.
A woman of principle.
She even wears a mask to the mall and washes her hands for like 20 seconds.
Some people are just too perfect.
And when she has a sore throat, cough, or runny nose, she wears a mask too.
Aww. I can't believe it.
Talk about considerate.
I'm touched.
She can have my office chair.
She can have my office.
For everyone's good, let's adopt proper habits against the viruses. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
This is Lucky D. Real food you want. Come to Mango Bay every day.
Real food.
Mango Bay Restaurant, located in the heart of downtown Montreal, 1236 Mackay Street, Suite 201. For reservations, please call 514-875-7082 or visit mangobay.ca. Real food.
Let's get together and feel all right.
Turn your back to me. Before
you planned to LA to celebrate. I don't hold it in the palm of my hands. We drifted along with fate, and now it's just a matter of time. I know it will be worth the wait. This moment is yours and mine, and we'll walk on, yeah. Oh, and we'll walk on,
and I don't always see the consequence. My ego gets all, think I know it all, but you predict the fall just like you do every time. And you pull me from my vices that give me bad advice, and I know that, yes I know that. You deserve much better, I keep trying to get there but I stumble. Yeah, I stumble. And you say, sometimes you're just a stranger in disguise I don't recognize. But baby, well I know I can keep loving you with my eyes closed. I will. I'm Sometimes I think that the only thing more stubborn than me is your loyalty. And you always know the right punch to throw to make a man of me. So look me in the eyes, get me down to size, make me realize that I take your love for granted and live on second chances. You know that, but you know that, that I'll be running like a bandit. Won't leave you empty-handed, back to you every time. And you say sometimes you're just a stranger in disguise. I don't recognize, but baby, well I know I can't keep loving you with my eyes closed. I wear your heart like an accessory, and I'll play with it so easily. Oh, I screw up, I get high, I get so out of love, but I'll be coming home to you every damn time. And you say well, I know I can't keep loving you with my eyes closed. I wear your heart like an accessory, and I play with it so easily. Oh, I screw up, I get high, I get so out of line, but I'll stumble home to you every damn time.
Des jours où l'on se sent si seul au monde, mais parfois le silence fait plus de ravages qu'une tempête qui rage. Si le vent pouvait seulement souffler quelques mots à ta place, à ta place, à ta place. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, attends-moi dans l'ombre. Se cache quelque part la lumière qui n'y a jamais. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, car demain je reviens. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, car demain je reviens. Il y a des rêves qu'il faut savoir abandonner, car une étincelle pour faire prendre le feu. Faut croire que le temps apaisera mes traqueurs. À ta place, à ta place, à ta place. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, attends-moi dans l'ombre. Je sais que se cache quelque part la lumière qui n'y a jamais. Attends-moi dans l'ombre. Quelque part, je sais qu'elle se cache quelque part. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, attends-moi dans l'ombre. Je sais qu'elle se cache quelque part. La lumière qui n'y a jamais. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, car demain je reviens. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, car demain je reviens. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, car demain je reviens. Attends-moi dans l'ombre, car demain je reviens.
me suis préfacé. J'attends lundi comme un trader, devant l'ordi jusqu'à pas d'heure. Je veux pas dormir, mon lit me fait peur. Je suis comme Sophie dans son malheur.
J'ai pensé le bonheur comme un coffre. Je vais fermer l'honneur pour mon staff. Pour le moment, je suis amorphe. Quand je dis que ça va, c'est du bluff. Je veux.
Ma meute à la rescousse, qui me soutiennent même quand tout s'écroule. De Malmö à Rimouski, les gars me suivraient coûte que coûte. Je vous ai rien dit même quand tout n'allait pas. Je parle peu de mes plaies, mais là c'est mange dit tout tourne chez moi.
This is CKUT 90.3 in Montreal. You're tuned to Terminal 5.